It is Sunday, April 10th, 2022. Welcome to the 25th episode of Tudo Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast by the fans, for the fans. Christian, Mitch, I'm Kevin. This is Christian and Mitch's baby. They dreamt about this. They've been talking about this forever, and they finally twisted my arm long enough to help bring them along on this journey. But this is their baby. Congrats, boys. 25 episodes. Feeling pretty good, eh?
Yes.
Love it, man. We're just talking about it. If we time it out right, I think we can get the 100th episode to be a special World Cup, Portugal World Cup victory episode.
Oh, yeah.
If we time it just right, we might be able to do that.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. Well, we're going to be talking about the World Cup here as Portugal been drawn into Group H of the FIFA World Cup. And it actually isn't a group of death, which is a nice little surprise. But it is a group that could certainly trip them up. To help talk about this group as well, we're going to bring in one of our longtime listeners, viewers, Danny Fernandez. Having a nice cup of coffee as well. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Congratulations.
Your audio is kind of cutting in and out, buddy.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. It's all good. That's the joys of live podcasting. We'll see what happens. So hopefully it'll all work out. But, okay. Well, let's go, boys. Portugal, Group H, and it's Ghana, Uruguay, South Korea. What do we think?
Well, I think it's a decent group, well-rounded for sure. Uruguay is obviously the strongest team out of all of them, and I think he's going to give us the most trouble, especially knowing that we lost to Uruguay in the round of 16 at the 2018 World Cup. So, I mean, knowing that, man, they've got a couple of weapons, one that we know very well, Darwin Nunes. You know, he's in amazing form right now. Just scored a hat trick yesterday for Benfica. He's been arguably the only bright spot for Benfica this year. I think arguably probably one of the best strikers in the Portuguese league right now. So we all know what he can do. And Uruguay is going to be a force. But I don't think we can completely count out Ghana and South Korea, especially we know how Portugal is going into these World Cups, sometimes playing, you know, down to the other team's level a little bit is something that we can sometimes get into the trouble with. But, you know, obviously South Korea's got Sun. He's their biggest threat. Ghana, you know what, I'll be the first to say I don't know a whole lot about their team. We'll have to do some research and see what's cooking on that side. But overall, it should be a group we for sure get out of, if not in first, for sure in second.
Yeah, and I didn't want to judge what you said, first or second. But if we get second, potentially be playing Brazil.
Yes.
So this is a group that we have to go all out. I mean, every group we do, but this one in particular, go all out and win and make a statement and not crawl out like we did the last few tournaments. You guys look back the last few tournaments, we qualified as a third place team. And yeah, that's on it.
That's a great point.
Yeah, that won't happen this time. I believe third place teams don't get in. And yeah, again,
they don't. It's only top two.
Yeah. So we got to go out in this group. Uruguay definitely has some big names. Darwin Nunez, I think every big team in the world wants him right now, and rightfully so. He's a young prospect. He has a lot of everything, but he's skilled. He could score. He's big. He's strong. He's good. Also, Ugarte, although I don't think he's going to play. Ugarte is growing like crazy. Yesterday, had an amazing game. Game before, man of the match. Highly skilled CDM. Obviously, the big names like Cavani and Suarez will still be there. There's a lot of experience. Their back line's great. They're not going to be easy, man. And also, like Mitch referred to, Korea, they have Heung-min Son. They have that Wolves forward. It's there. They have some they have some really good players. Ghana, they're a quick, fast team. Those African teams are – they can run really fast. They're on top of you. It's not going to be easy, man. None of those games are going to be easy. And in a World Cup, man. There's no easy teams, man. They're literally the best teams in the world. So,
Danny, yeah. What do you think, buddy?
No, I agree. Pretty much summed it on. Hit nail on the top there. I feel from group of death.
Hey, Danny, you're cutting out big time there. I don't know if it's your mic or what's going on. Maybe use the computer mic or whatever. Yeah. That might be easier. Let's see if that works better. The joys of live podcasting.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, much better. All right, buddy. So what do you think there?
I think Mitch and Christian hit the nail on the coffin there, summing it up. For once, it's good to see Portugal not in the group of death or not see Germany in there. Obviously, I think if we're going to win a tournament, we're probably going to come across one of those teams. But it's good to see, I think, especially teams, you know, African teams, I think, as Mitch said, I mean, I'm not 100% up into Ghana, so I might have to do some research over the next little bit as well. But I think, you know, from our, this group could probably most likely test our fitness and our stamina. Because Christian said that, you know, Uruguay's got some deadly weapons up front. And as we saw in the World Cup of 2018, I did think Portugal did play fairly reasonable well in that game. It's just, you know, those two killer strikes from world class striker like Cavani kind of did us in. I do think their back line, although it's still good, I do think it's aging. So maybe with our blend of youth and speed up front, we could maybe cause some damage there. And with South Korea, I mean, obviously Portugal's history with South Korea going back to the early part of the millennium, we didn't fare very well. Son is he's a world beater. So, even if we dominate that game more in possession, you know, a counterattack or two and Son could really kill us. As you guys mentioned on the podcast, hopefully with our back line, although Pep, bless his soul, maybe we can get some youth guys. You know, Mitch and Christian have mentioned, and, you know, I've kind of talked on the side with Christian and Mitch in our group chat, you know, maybe start getting Inacio in there, scored one hell of a goal yesterday, starting to get like David Carmo and some of these young guys in there. So hopefully, in the Nations League coming up to the World Cup, they start getting experience.
You know, I think the one thing that we're kind of missing here when we talk about South Korea is the Paulo Bento factor, right? You know, you have a manager that knows intricately the Portuguese style and the Portuguese national team. So I think that could definitely be a wild card. That's the one game that, to me, I'm worried about the most. I think Uruguay, again, they do have some weapons, but they are an aging team. And I think that they are ripe for the picking. Not too worried about them. Again, Ghana, Portugal will be able to get out of this group for sure. The only thing that worries me is, again, Portugal has that tendency when on paper the group looks like they're going to be able to get out of it, they end up falling flat on their face. We saw that at the 2014 World Cup. Was it 2014 or 2010? I think it was 2014. It was 2014 World Cup when they had USA, Ghana, and I can't remember who else they had in their group. But, that is going to be a problem. And to your point, Christian, you're right. You got to finish first in this group. You don't want to play Brazil. But with that being said, there's no guarantee that Brazil is going to win their group either. They've got a tough group. They've got Serbia. They've got Switzerland. And they've got Cameroon. Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, in theory, Brazil should get out of there. But at the end of the day, knowing Portugal's luck, they'll end up finishing first. Brazil will finish second. And we'll still end up facing them in the round of 16. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens there.
Here's a question for you guys. So knowing that the World Cup is not going to be this summer, it's going to be winter. So for players like Pep, for players like Ronaldo, some of the older elements of this team, key elements of this team, how much do you guys think that time factor plays on how much playing time they get? Because we're not just talking towards the end of the season here. We're talking they got to get through the rest of this season, and then it's almost half of another season. How much do you think that's going to play on, you know, someone like a Pep and a Ronaldo? Are they going to be fit?
That's a good thing. It's a good thing. They'll be at their peak. They'll be at their prime, and that's what you want, because that's the biggest issue that we've talked about it for a long time with the European Championships, with the World Cup, whatever. It's at the end of the season. The players are exhausted. They're tired. Look at Ronaldo yesterday. You know, he's limps off the field in that loss against Everton, smashes a fan's cell phone. Police are investigating that, by the way. So they're tired. They're frustrated. This way, coming into November, man, you are in peak form. And that's the time that you want to see them play.
But that's the thing. I agree with you there, but I'm saying, already we're noticing Ronaldo this season. We're noticing his fitness, his fatigue. It's starting to become noticeable. And that's now. Now we're going to tack on another half of a season plus half of another. Do we think he's going to be starting every game for Portugal.
Yes.
Depending on what level, like between now and then. I mean, we're talking almost a year of football under his legs. And these are 30, there's going to be 30, almost 38-year-old legs we're talking about. Do we think he's going to be good to be starting every game is where I'm coming from.
Will he start? Right. Yes. Will he start? Yes. But this is where, again, we talked about it the last podcast, that Fernando Santos has to start making and thinking those decisions that you have to be okay to take off for Ronaldo at the 70th minute, or you have to be able to look at their fitness and make those decisions at that point.
I think he definitely has to have those conversations with him if he hasn't already in the background, as you alluded to, Kevin. Do you guys also think, I think I asked you this the other day, do you guys also think that Ronaldo moving to the Premier League from the Serie A, I mean, obviously the Serie A is still a demanding league, but with the Premier League, there's more games, it's a little bit more physical, and as good as Ronaldo keeps himself in shape, do you think that has a little bit him hammering on his fitness? And as you were alluded to, Kevin, every time there's a Euro World Cup, it's coming up now in June. Most of our players, they all play on top teams. They're into late season runs for their teams or Champions League or Europa League. So yeah, by the time they get to the finish line and it's a Euro Cup or World Cup, it's been a long season. They're exhausted. Kevin, as you touched there, I was actually talking about this with my brother the other day. One of the hopes is that because this tournament's kind of like mid-season, that's usually when most of our guys are on fire and all cylinders. I mean, look at like Bernardo Silva, all the Man City boys, the Wolves guys. In November, they were like, talking about like top players in the world, like Ballon d'Ors. So do you think that's hopefully going to favor us? And then also factor in, as we always have to talk in with our team, with Ronaldo and Franz Zanz, is he going to be able to come off in the 70th minute if he's not having his day? Or I don't know. These are all, I guess, all things that need to be talked about. And I guess that's why you guys are here to talk about it all the time. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah. Honestly, with this whole Ronaldo thing, I think everything's hyphenated because of how bad Manchester United is. If he was on a team like Manchester City, where they hold the ball a lot more and they're attacking a lot more and they're more positionally aware and their midfield was stronger, we might not be having these conversations.
You should have gone to City.
Yes, I think as much. I'm a United guy. I don't think he should have gone to City, but I guess my point being is everything's hyphenated. Like even like Maguire, for example, you could see how bad he is because he's being forced in a lot more defensive situations. Where I think that's because of their midfield, but that's a whole different argument. I think Ronaldo will be good in the World Cup. I think everybody's asking these questions because Ronaldo might not even be in the Champions League next year. Man United is so bad. Obviously, his fitness levels are not the greatest because he's being forced to run back and do different roles and play more games. And in a league that's the best league in the world, there's no breaks. Whereas like in the Italian league, there's like three or four or five good teams. Mm-hmm. Other ones are just beating teams down. So you don't notice it as much. Obviously, age is a factor. But I think going into to November, I think – What you're worried about, I think it's actually going to be good for him because I'd rather see him mid-season going into the World Cup mid-season instead of going after a whole Premier League season and then playing in the World Cup. Historically, even one of the last World Cups, Ronaldo went and injured after playing so many games and all these Portuguese players playing the Premier League and these top leagues. By the time the season's over, they're tired. They're done. I remember a couple of seasons back, I brought it up in a few podcasts ago. There was a season where Bruno Fernandes was averaging a game every 3 to 4 days. So after the course of a full season, now you have a World Cup or a big tournament, you're going to be tired. You're not going to be the same player. But now if you're going in November, those same players, they're going to be right for the picking because that's mid-season. That's where they get all the jitters out. They establish themselves. They're more in a rhythm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be good for us.
I think as long as we are not trying to, as long as Fernando Santos is not forcing Ronaldo into the starting 11 just to appease his ego and appease, the aura of what Ronaldo is within the Seleção and not kind of ruffle any feathers and rock any boats. Because you got to remember, guys, the top attacking players that we have outside of Ronaldo. So we're talking Diogo Jota, João Félix, André Silva, Gonçalo Guedes, Rafael Leão. These guys are coming into their peak form. And what I just don't want to see is I don't want to see a potentially subpar Slezen that is kind of forcing Ronaldo into a lineup that he can't keep up, where we could put out a much better starting 11 potentially without him and then have him come on as a super sub. Yeah. That may be a more effective utilization of Ronaldo at the World Cup as a super sub. Imagine a defense is gassed 70th minute and you see Cristiano Ronaldo getting ready to come on. I don't know, man. I think that should be explored. At least throughout these next Nation League games, I think that should be explored a little bit.
I think the difficulty with that, though, is everything gets second-guessed, right? If you have Cristiano Ronaldo on the bench to come in as a super sub, then and Portugal loses, guaranteed the next day, everyone's like, well, Fernando Santos can't believe you have the greatest player in the world and you didn't start him, right? You all of a sudden, you're going to be damned if you do, damned if you don't. I do think, though, that what we saw in these World Cup playoffs prove that there is a culture shift going on. You're starting to see Ronaldo start to play more of that secondary role, which was good to see. You saw Fernando Santos take him off there in that game against North Macedonia. So those are all positive signs. I think that is the difference being in the game changer in all of this is come November, that's when, again, as we've talked about, Ronaldo will be in peak healthy form. And I think that's where I think he will still be effective as a starter. I think you can still consider him as a super sub potentially, but I still think you need his leadership. And I've been saying this for a long time, in my opinion, this is his last tournament. I do not see him going into Euro 2024. I just don't. As much as he wants to, I just don't see it.
Well, I think if Portugal wins the World Cup, he'll make that his swan song and he'll be done. I think if we don't win the World Cup, he may potentially want to still be involved.
Well, whether he wants to or whether he should or will be able to, in terms of the next coach that comes in, might just say, listen, it's time for this new generation. Havoc tuning in right now. Hopefully Jota's in top form like he's at Liverpool. He just scored another goal today. He did. Spoiler alert. Stop listening if you don't want to know the score. But Manchester City up 2-1 in the 41st minute over Liverpool. So that's a big game happening in the English Premier League. So keeping a close eye on that one.
So can I just jump in real quick? So there's a couple things with the Ronaldo thing. I don't think he's at the stage where he has to come off as a super sub. I still think he's influential. I think the argument more is, in my personal opinion, should he get subbed out earlier, like 70th minute, 60th minute? Because even in those games, in the qualification games, he was influential. He was part of the build-up plays. He had his chances, his poise. He is the captain, right? So him being the captain, he's a leader on the field. He brings other elements. And him just being on the field, whether he does nothing or not, it adds this aura, this poise to the team and this threat. Another thing, if that comes to the stage where Ronaldo does not start, there has to be a player just like in all other top teams that have to earn that spot, that has to pull it away from him, not physically, but in terms of performance. If there's a player on the bench that comes on, like you see in a lot of top teams, like Jota, speaking of Jota, had to go through that. He entered the greatest top three probably in the last 10 years, arguably one of them, maybe besides the Barcelona top three with Neymar, Suarez, and Messi. They're a great team, but he trickled his way in because he came on, he scored, he put on big performances. If these players coming off the bench come in and take that spot, they come in, they score, they come in and destroy o jogo, okay. But going back to the last World Cup, Ronaldo won the golden boot. So that being said, if that comes to that stage, it's not just the coach. It's also the players coming on that have to take that spot. If there's a player on the bench that comes on and comes and does these crazy performances, Fernando Santos might not have a chance to play Ronaldo. He'll just look stupid. So it's the coach, but it's also the players coming off. And these other players, which they did in the playoffs have to step up. If they start doing that, that will help force Fernand Sanchan.
Cristiano Ronaldo will be 75 years old and Christian will still be arguing for him to be in the starting 11.
No, because that's where that's the only, like, I agree with what you're saying. There obviously has to be somebody who earns the right to kind of replace him. My only argument is to what you're saying. Yes, he is suitable to start today. What I'm saying is we're talking about a tournament that's 8 months away. And 8 months of football on a 37-year-old who plays at as high of a level as Ronaldo does is a lot of that's a lot, man. It's a lot of fatigue to put on him. It's a lot of matches. He's not getting younger. He's getting older. And as much as we want to try and deny it, he is getting older, man. He really is, and it's starting to become noticeable. And what I'm saying is, if he we're already noticing it today, how much more are we going to notice it in 8 months? And is he going to be fit? I don't know. I just worry about that. I worry about that. He could, as he does many times, prove me wrong and keep himself at top pinnacle shape, and and be in good form for his club, and everything is okay. But I just know at this level, at this age, man, it starts to take a toll. And we're not talking about the tournament is in a few months. It's in 8 months, and that's going to be a lot of football that's going to be on under his legs from now until then. So,
but not as much as if it was in the in the summer. So I think, again, we've hammered that point, but it is true. I know this is a Portuguese podcast here, but we do got to show some love for Canada. Canada drawn into Group F in the World Cup. They will be taking on Belgium, Morocco, and Croatia. It is their first World Cup since 1986. First thoughts with this one is obviously Canada being in pot four, we knew that they were going to get a difficult group no matter what happened. But I actually don't think this is a terrible group for them, especially the way they were slotted in. So they're slotted in as F2 in this group, which means they will start off against Belgium. They will lose that game. That's okay. We'll just get that off the board there. Then they have Croatia. That's the game that will make or break this tournament for Canada. Canada can absolutely get a draw against Croatia. Maybe they get lucky with the win, but realistically, you get a draw against Croatia. That sets up the game against Morocco. Canada can absolutely beat Morocco. So you get that. You're now 1-1-1. You've got 4 points. You're in the hunt for that second spot. So it'll be, I think Canada has a potential to surprise and get through this group, but it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I think Luis Enrique, the coach of Spain, was caught at the World Cup draw event being asked, what's the one team you want to avoid? And he said Canada.
Well,
so that goes to show, man. Canada has made some waves. I actually think I agree with Kev. I think this is not a horrible group for Canada. I do think they can, they'll more than likely lose to Belgium, but I think Croatia is a very beatable team for Canada. I really do. I think that's the type of team that Canada will actually be excited to go up against, because they can sit back, they can absorb some of the pressure. Croatia is an aging side as well. They don't have the same level of threat that they once did. The Mandzukic's of the world, even Modric, he's getting older. Perisic is getting older. So I don't see Croatia being that same level of threat that they were years back. So I think Canada can kind of sit back and absorb, and it's a team that they can hurt on the counter. And I think that's kind of the ideal matchup for Canada. And then I think Morocco, they can absolutely get a result out of there. So it's going to be interesting to see, but I feel fairly confident that Canada could get out of this group.
What's your take, Danny?
I agree with you guys. I personally think Canada's played 4 games at this World Cup. I think that they'll get out of this group. And then I guess anything could happen from there, but I'm fully confident Canada will play 4 games at this coming up World Cup. You guys, all the points that I was going to mention, you guys all Kevin and Mitch, you guys all pretty much hit the head on the nail for me. So if
Canada goes, I think it would be safe to say that Canada would finish second in the group. I don't think anyone's thinking that they'll finish first. So they finish second, they'll play the first place team in Group E. So that would be either Spain, Germany, Japan, or the winner of Costa Rica, New Zealand. At that point, I think Canada, your tournament is done. But, I mean, hey, stranger things have happened. You know, we saw it with Iceland. So
that's right.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, Mitch brought up a lot of good points. I think Canada, they're not the Canada that you know, everybody was used to, that, you know, lackluster teams that nobody really, you know, watched or cared about them. They actually have a legitimately good team.
Yep.
And this is not even us being biased. They won the CONCACAF for a reason. They have a lot of young, speedy players. They have guys like, you know, David, that's one of the top strikers in the world. We have
Kyle Larin.
Kyle Larin, he's awesome. Man, the list goes on and on. Canada is no pushover. And like Mitch was saying, that, you know, Croatia is aging. They're not the Croatia of old. So they are beatable, or even to get a result out of there, they can do it. And Morocco, I'd pick Canada any day over Morocco.
Yeah.
So I agree a lot with what Danny was saying. I think Canada can at least play four games in this World Cup, for sure.
Which would be great to see. Danny, what's your club team?
Benfica.
Oh, man. Come on. You know what? We're going to stop bringing Benfica guests on. This is not fair.
Why did someone call me? Technical difficulties. We're going to lose connection.
Not always shorthanded. No,
I was about to say the podcast is always a little bit unbalanced. Kevin and Christian. I got to help him, my buddy Mitch.
Kevin's not fanatic.
Exactly. Middle of the road.
Kristen and Mitch can attest to this. They've known me long enough. I'm hardcore 100% Benfiquista, but I'm not one of those guys that, like, if Sporting's playing in the Europa League or Champions League or Sport, I mean, at the end of the day, they're representing the Portuguese flag. I always want them to do well, but
when
they play against Benfica, obviously, no.
let's jump in there, because you know what? Braga did very well against Rangers, pulling out a 1-0 win in the Europa League. Benfica up against Liverpool. Look, we knew that was going to be difficult. You know, for a moment there, it looked like they might pull something out against Liverpool. They ended up losing 3-1. Second leg coming up on Wednesday. It's a big week for Benfica. So they got the Liverpool game Wednesday, and then they've got the Lisbon Derby on Sunday. Where are you putting your attention if you're Benfica? Danny, you can start. You're the new Benfica guy.
Sure. I mean, we Mitch and I talked about it, and even Christian, like, you play Liverpool on one of those games, right? Benfica had opportunities. That game could have been easily going back to Anfield 2-2, or even, you know, even favorable to Benfica. But when you play a team like Liverpool, if you don't bury, you get a chance or two, you got to put those in the back of the net. Obviously, a Lisbon derby, derby Lisboeta, you never want to lose those. So at the end of the day, I don't know. I guess maybe it focused a little bit on the Lisbon, the derby Lisboeta, just for some bragging rights, at least, because nothing's going right for us by Benfica this year. Going into Anfield, I don't know, say a couple of 4-3-3s. And hope for the best. I don't know. Going down 3-1 to Anfield in that atmosphere, I don't know. Unless Benfica scores a goal early, and continues going from there. I don't know, maybe Darwin has another performance in it of his life in him, but I'd rather have Darwin score the goals now for Benfica and be completely dry come November, December. So
you might have to find out what priest Fernand Sanchez has been working for him, and that guy has 9 lives.
Hey, but you know what? I was one of the first to say, like, Benfica was going to get destroyed by Liverpool.
Oh, everybody knew that.
Everybody was kind of on that. And the first half, it definitely was looking that way. But I got to say, Benfica was the better team in the second half. They really were. They outplayed Liverpool. They just did. And you know, Danny said it. We said it. I mean, there was a couple of chances. You know, Everton Savinha missed one that Alisson Becker saved right at the top of the box. He's got to be burying that, man. And then Darwin had one. I mean, man, this is the curse of being in playing in the Portuguese league, man, with the level of refereeing that we have in the Portuguese league. You know, this infuriates me to no end. Darwin Nunez has a ball played to him. He does everything right. He does everything. The hardest part, he dekes Van Dijk. He's free of Van Dijk. All he has to do is bury it, and Van Dijk puts an arm, puts his hand on Darwin's chest. He's not impeding him in any way. He just puts the hand on his chest. He could have kept going. No, he falls. He falls right away, looking for the penalty. And that just drives me crazy. Like, if I'm the coach of Benfica, oh my God, I am ripping into this guy. But that's unfortunately the result of these players playing week in and week out in the Liga Portuguesa, because you know what? Unfortunately, that would probably have been reviewed by VAR. And with the way that these guys have been calling penalties in the Liga Portuguesa lately, it might have very well been given it as a PK. But in my mind, it's not. And he could have potentially tied the game at that point 2-2. So like Danny said, we could have very well have been going into Anfield 2-2. And you know the golden rule.
You even said it yourself, Mitch. As soon as that happened, you're like, you were screaming in our group chat. You're like, stay on your feet, dude. And going back to what we talked about, right? Like, if that's the Derby Lisboeta against Sporting, sorry, my Sportings, but that's probably a penalty in favor of Benfica, right? It's our culture of our league, unfortunately.
Yeah, like Paulinho had one that was pretty controversial last game.
Yeah.
I was so pissed. Like, I was talking with my good buddy Kevin about it. I was pissed at Paulinho. Because he was on a breakaway, and this is touching up on what Mitch was saying. This is a Portuguese league penalty. He burned the goalie. All he had to do was put it in the net. It was a heavy touch, but he was like, okay, if I feel the slightest contact, I'm going down. And he got a yellow card for simulation. They went to VAR. They zoomed in, and yeah, he technically got touched. He did get touched, but in the Portuguese league, that's a penalty every time. Paulinho knows that. But I personally don't like seeing those. I think it kills the game. I think now you're going to be analyzing every little touch. Players are going down so easily. Like, Porto is the king of that. Tademi is the god of winning quality shots. He always drags his foot back. And, this goes back to the Darwin incident. It's because he's used to that. He knows in the Portuguese league, that's a penalty shot all day. But, my opinion, it needs to be changed.
Oh, for Paulinho.
It's been like that for years.
He takes the step. Yeah. He actually trips himself because he takes a step.
Yeah.
And then he loses his balance. And his next step, his foot hits the turf. And that's what makes him trip. Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe you've seen that. But like I watched the Juiz final. And they even said it was like, whether I agree with it or not, I wouldn't have called it. But basing it on what they've called in the Portuguese league, particularly with Porto, it's a penalty. So technically it was a light touch. Yeah, he stepped. He can go on and on and on. But in the Portuguese league, the criteria that they built up, that they're going to call that a penalty, unfortunately.
That's the sad part. Our level of officiating the standard of officiating has just been lowered to the point where you just shake your head. And it wasn't even that one. In the same week, I don't know if you guys saw this, it was a defender from Portimonense who was given a red card. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, man. I mean, he literally, he's coming across the player's back and he puts a hand on the guy's shoulder, light contact, trying to kind of gain, but he doesn't pull him. There's a hand on the shoulder and this goes to VAR. And he gives him a red card. Like, it's so bad. It was really bad. It's so bad.
We were playing Porto a few games back. And Kolač, he got stepped. Tademi went and he stepped on him. Like, I could even send you the video one of these days. But he went and stepped on him and he twisted and he dived. And Kolač got a yellow card. And if you look back, the foul was on Tademi. It should have been the yellow card for Tademi. They gave it to Kolač, and he ended up getting his second yellow early on second half. We were up 2-1 at the time. We ended up losing the game. Those little details with refing can change the dynamic of the season, of the game, fill in the blanks. And they got to get better with that. Because
how do we fix it, man? Like, how does the Liga improve the standard of officiating?
Well, in my personal opinion... Sorry. Go ahead, Christian. My personal opinion, it all starts with, whether I'm right or wrong, this is just the way I see it, is the culture in Portugal. They have these shows on CMTV where they spend an hour and a half attacking the refs and they bring up these plays and they put all these pressure on the refs. And it's a foul. Like, if you look at it, it's like a little bit of a foul, but that's the standard now. Now, if you don't call that, it's they're getting attacked, they're getting all this toxicity comes up. And you got to also feel for the refs, because now if they don't call that, they're going to be attacked. They might not, you know, ref the next big game. There's a whole shishtema, like they say, that goes behind the scenes. That I think that's the root of it, which carries on to the officiating. I think that has to be nipped in the bud. If you're going to be attacking the refs all the time, there has to be fines like they are in the Premier League. I think it all starts there, and it will slowly shift the culture. That's just my opinion on what you guys
and it's
think.
Easy to it's always easy to blame the refs. We have to remember that in the heat of the game, what you see, it's so much different when you get to go look at replays. That's been the problem with VAR, quite frankly, is to me, VAR is only important, should only really be used, is it a goal or not goal? Even the offside stuff, how many times have we seen where the guy's pinky is like slightly off the line and they're calling it offside? Like, you're getting away from the intent of it all, right? Yeah. So there has to be they got to figure that out, and that's how you're going to get the officiating situation handled. Props to Braga for their 1-0 win over Rangers. Hopefully they can get the job done and move on to the Europa League semifinals. Lisbon Derby coming up on Easter Sunday. If I'm Benfica, I'm putting all my attention on the Champions League game. They're 9 points back of Sporting for second in the Liga with 5 games to go. Realistically, not going to happen. So Porto Sporting will get the automatic qualification into the Champions League. Benfica will go through the qualifying round. Porto, though, in search of their 57th straight Liga game without a loss today, which would be pretty incredible. They're having a heck of a season. They're up against... who are they playing today? They're playing Vitória Guimarães. So that'll be a big game for them. Realistically, looking at this, Porto still has to play Benfica. Sporting obviously plays Benfica on Sunday. The standing's pretty much firm. Porto's going to win. Sporting will finish second, Benfica third.
It's obviously most likely to be Porto, but they still got to play Braga. Braga's really hot right now. They got to play Braga and they got to play Benfica. So we need a favor from you guys, please. If you guys can beat them for us, and we have to beat you, unfortunately. I'm sorry. Next Sunday, if you guys could do us that favor, really appreciate it. But yeah, most likely it's in Porto's hands. Yeah, you brought up the 57th straight win, potentially. They've been helped a lot this year, man. And like, you know what? They are the best team right now. I think I'm going to give them props. I'll call it how it is. They're playing really good soccer. But on top of that, they are getting a lot of, you know, beneficial calls, penalty shots. There was in 14 games, where have you seen this before in the Premier League with Liverpool or Man City? In out of 14 games, 10 of them, they play with the man up. So 10 out of 14 games, they're playing against 10. Against the top four Portuguese teams up until like maybe the last one. Last game, they were playing with a man up. They played a man up against Benfica. They played a man up against Sporting. They played a man up against Braga. This goes back to the officiating. But the problem is, it almost seems like it's tilted to one team a lot of the time.
What?
Yeah. No. Oh, yeah. No. My personal opinion, whether you agree with it or not. And those other four games that they did not play with the man up, they had a penalty shot. So it seems like they're playing a man up. Or they're getting a tricky penalty shot. Or those questionable calls that they go to Porto's way, never really against Porto. So, yeah, they're playing really good. Yeah, they most likely deserve to be in first place because what they're playing. But on top of that, they are getting these beneficial calls. And these, and I'm not trying to sound like a conspiracy theorist. You guys can see it for yourself. But it seems like they're being a colinho a little bit. But 100%. Maybe that I'm just bitter, but that's the way I see it.
You are bitter. You're a very bitter man.
maybe it's a bit of both.
Okay. We're getting towards the back end here of our podcast. And like we said, it's our 25th episode. So let's have some fun.
Hands up. Do we call the drop?
Man, that last picture always makes me smile. That was when Portugal booked their spot in the final of Euro 2016. 25th episode, Christian and Mitch said they wanted to talk about Portugal's all-time World Cup roster. So to be clear, these are just looking at the players that have played in the World Cup. So Portugal played in 1966, 86, 2002, 2006, 2010, 2014, and 2018. Who are your top 11? Let's start with goaltending. Who would you go with? The floor is open.
Daninius, get his.
You're the guest, buddy. So.
That's a tough one, man. I'm not sure who to go with goaltending there, just for the sake of it. I know it's some of you guys are not a fan of him, but I'll just go with even though he only played in one. I'll go Vítor Baía.
My pick's going to be a little unorthodox. I'm going to go with Vítor Damas. Vítor Damas, growing up, was one of my dad's favorite players. He talked very highly of him. Although I wasn't alive to really see a play, looking back, a lot of people regard him as one of the greatest Portuguese goalies of all time. Obviously, you got to throw in a guy like Vítor Baía or Rui Patrício. But yeah, I'm leaning towards Vítor Damas.
Did he play in the World Cup?
Yeah.
Which one?
I don't remember, but he played the he was the goalie at the time.
Maybe 86.
Maybe 86. Don't hold me to it. Maybe that's a mistake on my part, but I would go with.
I don't know that he
might have to fact check. If not him, I'll go Rui Patrício.
I'm gonna break the tie. I'm gonna go Ricardo.
Hold on a sec. Vítor Damas, he was at the World Cup, but he was the backup to Manuel Bento.
Manuel Bento in 86.
Yeah. Okay, he goes in. He's technically there, right?
Wait. In 1986, Vítor Damas, because Manuel Bento suffered a fibula injury in training. So Damas played in group stage losses against Poland and Morocco. So you want to go with a goalie that lost to Poland and Morocco. Got it. Okay. Moving on. Yeah.
So I'm going to go Ricardo. I'm going Ricardo because in one of the second best World Cups that we ever had, which was in 2006, we finished fourth place. He had that great game against England in the penalty shootout again. Flashes of 2004 and in 2006 again in a penalty shootout. Made some big saves for us in that game. So
that's, you know what? I really like that pick.
That's my choice for best World Cup goalkeeper of all time for Portugal.
Okay, let's move on to defenders. What are we looking at there? I mean, just off the top of my head, I would imagine that, you know, Pep has to be on that list, right? He's got to be on that list. Do you look at someone like Fernando Couto on that list? Do you look? I mean, Portugal's had some really good defenders there. You had what's his face? Oh my goodness, the Cigan.
Bruno Alves.
But Bruno Alves, is he a guy that you consider, right? I mean, man, oh man, a lot of good defenders over the years. Abel Xavier, maybe you want him because he had the funky hair. I don't know. What do you look at? Okay, we're not talking about Euro 2000 here.
What's your back four, Daninius?
Central defense, I'd probably go Ricardo Carvalho and Pep.
That's what I got.
Tough one for Os Laterais. I don't know. Maybe for Lateral, I'll go with just because going back for one of our last successful World Cup in 06, I'll go with Miguel. And I don't know. I'll have to pass on the left back for now. It's not coming to me. I'll let Mitch and Christian go.
Let's go. You go.
So I got at right back Miguel,
wow,
because of how well he played in 06. At left back, I've got Hilario, which was a Sporting legend, left back who was played very well in the 66 World Cup. And then my center backs, I went Ricardo Carvalho, and I didn't go with Pep because Pep has never really had a very good World Cup performance for us. If anything, he's actually hurt us a little bit at the World Cups, notably in his red card against Germany, basically destroyed our entire World Cup. After that game, we went down Pep, and he was actually more of a, you know, he hurt us more than anything else. So I actually did some research, and I had always heard of this guy. His name was Vicente, and he actually played for Bolognese. And in the 1966 World Cup, he was actually the one who man-marked Pelé in the game against Brazil. And apparently, he was Matateu's brother. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Matateu. Matateu, they say that Matateu was better than Eusébio and Pelé. He played for Bolognese. I've never seen. I'm just going by what I've heard my dad and stuff talk about. But apparently, this guy Matateu was amazing. And this is actually Matateu's brother. And this guy Vicente is the one who man-marked Pelé in the 66 World Cup. And he was one of the best. This is out of Pelé's mouth. Pelé said that Vicente was one of the best center backs he'd ever played against. And apparently in that game, he man-marked him completely, took him out of the game for Portugal. And the only game he didn't play in that World Cup is the one that we lost against England. So some people say had Vicente been playing that game and he would have been there to mark Bobby Charlton, we maybe would have beat England. So based on the research that I did, I went with Vicente for my center back.
Well,
and if the game wasn't moved too.
And another interesting stat about this guy, Vicente, he went 11 years as a center back without ever getting a yellow or red card.
Wow. That's impressive.
And unfortunately, had a car accident, lost an eye, and had to stop playing. But that was his claim to fame. They called him the Pej de Lain, just because he was so soft. His feet were so soft. So that's my pick.
Mitch knew his assignment, man. He did his homework.
Yeah, man. I did my homework.
Yeah, my right back, I'd go with Miguel, too. Although Pep didn't have that one World Cup against Germany, I put Pep just for his longevity and what he brought to the team. He's been a leader and done a lot for us. And I put Ricard Carvalho as my other one.
Left back? Yeah.
Left back, I put Cancelo, but I don't think he's played in the World Cup yet. So,
no.
Oh, the tough one. I know he's not a pure left back, but maybe a Costinha. I'd put Costinha back there.
Costinha never played left back, man.
I know, but I'd slot him in there. I don't know who I'd put there, to be honest.
Nuno Valente?
Yeah, maybe Nuno Valente.
He was the left back in 06. He was steady Eddie for us.
We'll go Nuno Valente then.
There you go.
That's who I was probably going to go with too. Just again, going with the two laterals, Miguel and Nuno Valente, that gave us in 06 there our run.
And what about Fabio Coentrão?
Ah. That's
not a good one. 2010 World Cup. He was one of our better players.
Yeah, maybe. I like that pick.
Then he was injured in 2014.
That's right. But in 2010, he did play well.
Yeah. I was at the game he got injured at in 2014. It was against the Republic of Ireland in New Jersey. He went down, I think it was in the first half. And it was like, oh, no. Yeah. Here we go again. And it was just one thing after another. That tournament was really disappointing.
Hey, very good pick. Very good pick. I had not thought of
it. Yeah, that's a really good pick.
Very good pick.
And then we go to where we have an embarrassment of riches. Midfield and then up front attacking. Just open it up. What do you do? Mitch talked about off the air. He talked about how Rui Costa would not be on his list, which... I mean, I was a big Rui Costa fan, so I don't care. I would have had him on my list no matter what. But why no Rui Costa?
Again, we're going off of best World Cup, Seleção. And for me, Rui Costa never really had a great World Cup. He only featured in the 2002 World Cup where we went out in the group stage. And he only played. He did score against Poland, but didn't really play a whole lot. So my midfield comprises, I went with a kind of a 4-4-2, but my midfield comprises of Maniche, Bombas Maniche, and Mario Cluna. So I went with Maniche because, man, he showed up big time in 06, big winning goals against Mexico and against the Netherlands to get us into the semifinal. So, he always showed up. He was a great midfielder, one of my favorite midfielders. And then Mario Cluna was just an absolute legend for Benfica, and in the 66 World Cup, started every game, and just an absolute legend in Lumay Camp. So that's my two maestros in the middle, Manish and Mario Cluna.
It's funny because I picked Manish and I thought nobody would pick him. he was my unorthodox. Obviously, this team's going to look a little funny, but I got a midfield three. I got Deku for us. He was always been a maestro. Great player. Although he was Brazilian born, he always put on good performances for Portugal. Although he's not a pure midfielder, I've got Nani in there. Nani is who he is, but when playing for Portugal, he was always our second best player behind Ronaldo. He's always put on big performances for us. And then, of course, Manish, I don't know what it is, man. When he put that Portugal jersey on, man, he's a different beast, man. Different beast. So, that's my middle. My middle three.
Good choices. It's the same with Mitch there. I'll go with the 4-4-2. And in the middle of the park, Manich is a great choice, but I guess just for one of my favorites ever was Luna and Rui Costa in the middle. I guess kind of just more of the longevity that Rui Costa had at the Seleção, even though I agree with Mitch, being apart, I think, from 30 minutes and the goal against Poland. I don't think that was it for Rui Costa in the World Cup. He didn't come on very much. And then on the Nazales and my 4-4-2, Fieg on the right. And on the left, I'll go with, just because of the Trivela goal in the last World Cup, I'll go with Quaresma.
Oh, great, nice.
Great pick.
Nice. Great pick. Like that.
I wanted to slot him in, but...
And then up front?
Up front, I will go with it. I think it's pretty straightforward. Eusebio and Ronald. Although there could have been argument from what I've understood. I mean, my grandpa tells me all the time, like the gentle giant, I think they call him Uzetours. Apparently, I think he had 3 or 4 goals in the 1966 World Cup, and he was a Benfiquista. That's why my grandpa was also in love with him. But apparently, he was one of our better players in 1966, apart from Eusebio as well too. So, Eusebio and Ronald for me up front.
No Pedro Pauletas out there.
My front three, almost like a solo pick, but I got Luis Figo, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Eusebio. Luis Figo always held a special spot for me growing up. A lot of people always ask me, why is your favorite number 7 because of Ronaldo? I'm like, no. Since I was a kid, I was a diehard Luis Figo fan. And Luis Figo was one of those players that I don't know what it is, his presence, the way he controlled the ball, almost like a Pirlo, where the whole team got better with him. Like Ronaldo's more of a pure finisher. He's a game breaker, but Figo, I don't know what it was about him, man. He could just orchestrate the Portuguese national team and whatever team he played for. He was just a special player. So I cannot leave out Luis Figo. Cristiano Ronaldo goes without saying. And Eusebio, you know, we were talking a lot about the 1966 World Cup. Personally, I think we should have won that. He had an amazing tournament. I mean, we all know what he brought to or brings to the Portuguese national team. So yeah, that's my front three.
I went with my two wingers were Figo and Ronaldo on the wings, and then up front, my two strikers were Eusebio and Pedro Pauleta. That's my picks, man.
But Pauleta, I mean, he always underachieved in the big tournaments. He was usually a big player in qualification.
Hey, man, in 2002 World Cup, he scored a hat trick against Poland. He scored in the 2006 World Cup against Angola. So I mean, and he was one of our right behind Eusebio and Ronald. Pauleta is right up there, man.
Yeah.
As the highest scoring players for this lesson.
No Nuno Gomes.
No.
No Nuno Gomes, no Lietzen. where's Hugo Almeida? There's some good players. I mean, Simão Sabrosa, João Pinto. I mean, there's some key players that, have certainly left their mark with the Portuguese national team. But
I'm surprised nobody else has given Nani love, man.
Again, no, if this is different. We're picking the best World Cup. So not the best Seleção of all time, but the best World Cup Seleção of all time. So that's why my picks were a little bit different.
Yeah.
Okay, we are running up against the clock here, but I know, Christian, you wanted to – is it future players or something like that? You wanted to quickly
future mention? Portuguese stars.
Okay.
I wanted to do. So I guess I'll start. I'm going to go with – he's just coming up now. Ruben Ribeiro. I know in our chat we shared a video of him with his back towards the net, rolled the ball, put it through the guy's legs, and scored a banger. He scored a hat trick for the U19s. He came on last game, although it was only for 3 or 4 minutes. El Sturios, I mean, he started for the first time on the senior team, or came on for the senior team with Sporting. He came on for 4 minutes. And believe it or not, in those 4 minutes, he pulled out a crazy run. He ran past 4 or 5 guys. This guy is, you know, although he's young, he's only 16 years old. 16 years old. Things can change, as we've seen with a lot of, you know, very talented players. It depends how they're carried, how they're focused, a lot of variables. But given on what I've seen so far, I believe this guy is going to be a very, very special player.
Mitch?
Cool. I'm going to go with Thiago Veia. He's you know, playing in Benfica Bay right now. Really good little player. It remains to be seen if he'll get called up and start getting some minutes. But he's chimed in this year already with 8 goals, 4 assists. He's a little highlight reel. He's a good little player. I think Benfica could use him, especially maybe next year, start getting him some minutes. But I really like watching him in the B side. So that's my pick is Thiago Veia.
Can I just tune in real quick? I know you guys are linked with the new German coach.
Yeah.
Roger. Do you think he's going to invest into the juniors, or is it going to be different? Because I feel like Benfica has a great academy that they could invest in, but having that German coach coming in might be a little tough for.
I agree. Yeah, it's going to be tough. I'm personally not a huge fan of Roger Schmidt coming to Benfica. Yep. It's my personal opinion.
Okay.
I'm going to go obviously with Jota from Celtic will be the next future star.
At least you're consistent.
At least I'm consistent. And Danny, I think you've got your next future star sitting next to you.
He is
the next future star.
And he's left-footed. He's left-footed. We need a good left-footer.
We need a Canhoto.
Canhoto.
Okay, but here's the question. Is he going to play for the Portuguese national team or is he going to play for Canada?
Well, he's got 3 because my wife's Italian. So,
Oh, okay. So then, who do you go with?
I'm trying to lean him to more towards the red. So,
okay. So Canada or Portugal? That's the red. That's what we're going with. Yeah.
Maybe he'll just go Canada to be neutral, and we'll see.
The next I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. We literally have like 1 minute left here. Really quick, let's make the prediction: Benfica, Sporting. On coming up on Easter Sunday, who wins it, Danny?
Obviously, as a Benfica, I want to win it, but just given the way Benfica has been playing, and maybe as you said, alluded to earlier, Kevin, I think Benfica maybe just goes all out and gives everything they have in the Champions League. If I'm not mistaken, the game is in Al-Ahly because they played in Al-Ahly before the holidays there. It hurts me to say this, but I say Sporting 2-1.
Yeah,
Mitch.
Go ahead.
I'm just going to say 3-1 Benfica.
You're a loser. Christian.
I say 6-0 Sporting. No, I'm joking. No, I think the title race is on it. We have to win that. I obviously, a derby game, nobody wants to lose. I get it. But like Kevin alluded to before, they're already 9 points back. Sporting, this is like everything. They're going to put everything. They're not in any competitions right now. They're going to go all out, as they do always. But I would definitely lean towards Sporting to put the pressure on Porto. I'd say it's going to be a 2-1 too for Sporting.
Sporting should win, but I'm going to go with a draw, which will end Sporting's chances of winning the league title. So, 25th episode. Thank you all so much for tuning in to the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast. Danny, thanks so much for all of your insights and for joining us. You're always welcome on the show.
Thank you, buddy.
Mitch, Christian, I'm Kevin. Thanks for tuning in. Have a good one, everyone.
Ciao, guys.
Peace out.